and gentlemen, the festive season is almost upon us. I'll make sure to include a merry little jingle in the intro when I edit the episode. And along with the looming holidays usually comes a specific set of behaviors, namely overeating and most of all, drinking. And I'm not talking about hot tea here. And that's why I thought it would be most appropriate to invite Dr. Sally Adams, alcohol researcher and associate professor of psychology at the University of Birmingham, to the pod to shed some light and maybe help us get through the festivities without descending into an Ernest Hemingway novel this year. Dr. Adams, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, this is becoming a bit of an annoying phrase to my listeners' ears, but preparing for this interview, I was shocked by how utterly clueless I am about alcohol, a thing which, let's be honest, has played quite a prominent role in my life. Because apart from some extremely vague notions about dehydration, I haven't got the slightest clue as to what booze actually does to the human body. So maybe let's start here. What happens physiologically when we have a drink?
So when we actually pick up a drink and we have our first drink of the evening, most of the alcohol is absorbed actually through our stomach and small intestine. So that's why sometimes we get stomach irritation and we don't feel well either on the evening or the next day from drinking. But predominantly, as a psychologist, my interest is in what happens to the brain. And it takes a while for alcohol to travel to different parts of our body once it's absorbed through the stomach and small intestine. But one of the places it will feel it first is our brain. And the part of the brain that also feels alcohol the first is the prefrontal cortex at the front here, which is responsible for all of our decision making, our reaction times. So this kind of really feeds in nicely to why we engage in behaviours that we wouldn't normally when we drink. So we say we're having one drink, but we end up staying for five, and that's because of our prefrontal cortex. But the more that we drink, more parts of the brain are affected. So that's why we start to see things like slurred speech, difficulty with moving. And ultimately, if you do drink, you know, excessively in one session, we do see really dangerous things like breathing being compromised. This is because the more alcohol that we consume, different parts of the brain are affected. And then the next day, this is where things get really interesting, because our brain tries to put right all of the neurochemical imbalances that happen when we're drinking. So we've got all of that going on in terms of the brain, in terms of feelings of anxiety and low mood. But on top of that, as you mentioned, dehydration, upset stomach, nausea, sometimes actual vomiting. And this is because actually what our body's really trying hard to do the next day is break down alcohol into substances that we can process. So alcohol's toxic, right? It's and it gets broken down into something called acetaldehyde, which is really toxic for humans. We have to do this in order to be able to get rid of it, but this makes us really sick. And I think that's really mostly responsible for the vomiting, the nausea, the racing heart. It's not good for us as humans.
Okay, so alcohol hits our brain, but it hits a specific part of the brain, at least initially, the prefrontal cortex. And then the more that we drink, the more the effects spread throughout the entire brain. Am I correct?
Yeah, as your blood alcohol concentration increases. So the first part of your brain affected is that prefrontal cortex. But the more alcohol that you have in your blood, we start to see other parts of the brain are affected. And what's unusual about alcohol is that some drugs have a receptor in the brain. So there's the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor. We have opioid receptors. But we tend to think of alcohol as a really dirty drug because it basically interacts with every neurotransmitter in your brain. Every part of your brain is pretty much affected when you drink alcohol, which is why we see everything from, you know, you have your first drink, you feel quite relaxed, it's pleasant, all the way through to, you know, not being able to stand up, not being able to speak. You know, that's why we see such ranging effects, because of the global effect on the brain.
That's sort of like the inverse of what we've been told as kids in school or as teenagers, you know, like alcohol is safe, but the other stuff is super dangerous. So, yeah. You know, you can drink, but don't touch, you know, don't touch the party drugs or whatever, or don't smoke marijuana. It's funny how it's a complete 180 from then.
There's a really big study that was conducted in the UK, which were aimed at looking at ranking the harms of different drugs. So all drugs, illegal and including legal drugs such as alcohol and tobacco. And alcohol comes out on top as being the most harmful when you consider not only the harm to the individual taking the drug, but also the harm to society. Because in the UK, if we think about the amount of policing, so when people are violent because they've been drinking or they commit crimes or violence or they have to be hospitalised because of their drinking, but also lost productivity of not being able to work, for example, because you're too hungover. So the costs of alcohol to society are and the individual are huge.
Okay, but... If I understood that correctly, like the bad decisions come straight away because the prefrontal cortex, gosh, this is a mouthful, is affected immediately as soon as we have the first drink.
Yeah, really, really early on. Within one drink, research has been able to show that. So that part of your brain that decides you should go home, you've got things to do tomorrow, you've got work tomorrow, that part of the brain is the bit that's compromised first.
Okay, but then we throw a couple of extra tequila shots in there and it goes from bad to worse.
Yeah, because right. We start to see things like speech affected and we lose our inhibitions. And yeah, these are all because of alcohol's effects on the brain.
Recently, I saw the movie Leaving Las Vegas with Nicolas Cage. I don't know if you've seen that film.
He plays a
suicidal alcoholic who decides that he's going to drink himself to death in 2 weeks or something. An extremely cheerful film. But it certainly is possible to die from drinking too much in one sitting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You can poison yourself with alcohol. But as I mentioned, the parts of the brain, essentially, you know, our most primal part of the brain is to keep us alive and keep us breathing. And quite often what can happen if you drink way too much alcohol in one sitting is you essentially stop breathing.
Okay, this is gonna send my hypochondria into overdrive, but maybe this is what I need. But is regular consumption of alcohol linked to an increase of any cancers, perhaps?
So yeah, the research now suggests that 7 types of cancer are not only associated with alcohol but caused by alcohol. And I know that's not a well-known thing, actually. So quite often people say, okay, I know that there might be some risk, but actually the research has now shown that alcohol causes these 7 types of cancer.
Well, directly causes them.
Yes. So research has now been able to show that. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but some of them are quite unusual cancers like head and neck cancer. But there's a really strong particular link between breast cancer and alcohol, which is one of the biggest ones.
Wow. Here's something I can't wrap my head around. We all know people, maybe from a local pub, perhaps even, you know, we have them in our families who've been drinking every day for decades and yet are still doing fine, relatively speaking, you know, besides getting that typical face that people sometimes get when they drink a lot. So if alcohol is, in effect, you know, nothing but poison, how come these types of folks are still walking this earth?
I think there's always anomalies, and I'd say that those people are more likely to be the exception rather than the rule. And also, you know, my background is in health psychology, and I think we also, you know, see and hear what we want to believe. So everyone will recount that story of someone who's lived to 100 and smoked every day and drank every day. I would think that these people are more of an exception. And I think it's not just things like cancer, for example, or we know that alcohol's linked with things like heart disease as well. But I think increasingly we're becoming aware of, you know, sort of long-term conditions, particularly mental health, that alcohol is associated with. And I know it's one of the reasons that a lot of young people give for either cutting down or giving up alcohol is the mental health effects. So the sort of the next day, as it's been dubbed, hangxiety. So that terrible anxiety that you get the next day or low mood that for some people continues for quite a while. So I think, Yeah, the effects of alcohol are really far ranging. And yeah, it's not just those big sort of health conditions that we think about. But I'd like to think that the people who, you know, have drank a significant amount every day, that they're an exception. Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of a similar effect than, you know, people taking drugs describe as having like a calm down from drugs, because apparently a lot of like endorphins or whatever have been burnt to crisp during the
absolutely
night of drug taking. So is it similar to that?
Well, yeah, alcohol is a drug, I guess. At the end of the day, alcohol is a drug. And that really pleasant feeling we get when we have a couple of drinks, you know, I think most people experience that if they've ever drunk alcohol, that really nice warm feeling, that buzz, that relaxation of those couple of drinks, that's because of neurotransmitters that are being released in the brain. And the next day, your brain wants to desperately get things back to normal, back to business. So it tries to correct these elevated levels of, particularly we see a neurotransmitter called GABA, which is called the major inhibitory neurotransmitter. So that really does all of that, making us feel relaxed, making us feel much looser. But the next day, our brain wants to get the levels of this chemical back to normal. And sometimes it doesn't quite achieve that and it overshoots. So what we end up with is overactivity and then anxiety. And I think it's one of the most negative, you know, consequences of alcohol use that people talk about, is that next day of, what did I say? What did I do? That real shame, that guilt that people feel really awful about the next day.
Sounds very familiar. Yeah, I wanted to ask, does alcohol have any positive effects on the body at all?
I would say it has no health benefit, I guess, would be the
that's
way.
Harsh.
I know,
punch the
way.
Stomach.
No health benefit. That doesn't mean that people don't get benefit from the social aspects of what they do when they're drinking. And I know for some people, they will associate alcohol with socializing and having a good time. So it's not, you know, it's not, that's not the non-health benefit. I guess what I'm saying is, health-wise, there aren't any proven mental health positives of drinking or physical health effects. Quite often you'll hear people refer to this red wine being good for your heart research that was done. But actually, it's under very specific circumstances. Like, you had to be within a very short age range, and the amount of red wine that was consumed was minuscule. And actually, most of the benefit came from the red grapes, not the actual alcohol. So unfortunately, there really isn't any support for the health benefits of alcohol directly. There might be this indirect social benefit.
Yeah, this is actually where I was going with this. This is apparently outdated now, but I do remember when I was younger, people used to bring up the French paradox, which stated mm-hmm. that although the French eat a lot of butter and smoke a bunch of ciggies every day, they live pretty long lives. Mm-hmm. And the story went that apparently drinking red wine in particular had something to do with that.
Yeah, this was some studies that were predominantly done in animals, actually, in rats. But also the main health benefit of the wine came from the red grapes. So suggesting really you could get the same effect by drinking grape juice, but without any of the damaging health effects of the alcohol.
Can we kind of get the same effect that you were describing before, this GABA thing that makes us more relaxed, without drinking alcohol, maybe substituting it with something a bit more safe?
So I know that there's a product that's developed that's a spirit that's supposed to target GABA, and that's in the UK. It's developed by Professor David Nutt, who's well-known psychiatrist and researcher in this area. So that is supposed to be a spirit that specifically targets GABA receptors in the brain. I haven't tried it myself, but that is supposed to work that way. But I think when people talk about why we drink alcohol, I think the elephant in the room is because we get something pleasant from it, right? We get something enjoyable from it. We don't do it because it's, you know, for any other reason. I think we forget that we drink for pleasure. And I think a lot of people really enjoy that rewarding or relaxing effect that they get with the first few drinks. So I think that is quite hard to mimic. But I think over time, people who give up alcohol or cut down say that they find other things, you know, they go back to other things, or they find other things to do with their life that aren't around drinking.
So most of us, like you said, probably drink because of the way alcohol makes us feel. So what does it do to our psychology exactly, besides making us more relaxed?
I think that's the main one. So I think, yeah, it's about, you know, a lot of us do it to socialise. I also think there's a lot of expectation around there. So particularly in British culture, I've lived in the UK all my life. There's a really strong cultural expectation around drinking and fitting in, and it's kind of what we do. But yeah, I think people see alcohol as a reward. They see it as part of their lifestyle. And alcohol does affect most neurotransmitters in our brain. So there's a lot going on there that keeps us coming back, even when we have a really negative experience the next day.
Sounds familiar again. And I'm from Eastern Europe, so I think we have a similar problem there, culturally speaking. Way back, I interviewed Edward Slingerland, the author of the book Drunk. I do recommend that folks go check out that interview. I believe it was episode 11. Anyway, the book is basically his answer to the question on why we drink. What evolutionary sense does that make, since alcohol, like you said, is indeed poisoning us? And his answer is mostly revolving around the fact that drinking with others kind of dissolves barriers, mm-hmm. And makes us able to form groups easier. That if you get zonked together, it's easier to form bonds with strangers, which is kind of, like he argues, the foundation of civilization. Would you say that makes any sort of sense, since you're a psychologist as well?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of it. I think the expectation of, social facilitation around drinking. A lot of, you know, when we ask people, there's a lot of research on why people start drinking in the first place. So usually mostly when people are teenagers, why do they experiment? And I think it's usually to fit in and to be part of a peer group. And I think that's a huge thing. And then that's it's a rite of passage that we continue to go through. And I think things are changing. I think young people are reporting drinking less. They're finding new ways to bond with each other and to do things. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think things will be very different in 20 or 30 years' time. I'm thinking about when smoking was banned here. You couldn't smoke inside in the UK. It really changed smoking and the acceptability of smoking. And I feel like alcohol is kind of getting there now. There's, you know, that kind of acceptability of being really drunk in a public space and accepting people when they don't drink as well. That's changed a lot in the last 20 years. So we're more accepting of people who choose not to drink.
Yeah, that takes me back to my teenage years. And it was just as you described, I was a very self-conscious young man. And it was completely normal to get absolutely obliterated every weekend back home in Slovenia, you know. To bond with your peers and to be less nervous and less anxious about everything. But where I'm going with this is, I suppose, the question, is the damage permanent there?
I'm not sure in terms of globally the brain, but or the body, but I know things like the liver is regenerating. So if you do create damage in your liver from drinking, up until a certain point, if you stop, your liver will regenerate. So, you know, that's possible up until a certain point. The research on the brain is less clear, because what we sometimes see in people who've been chronically using alcohol for a really long time is that they show atrophy or brain shrinking. So you can actually see on a MRI scan of people's brains that certain parts of the brain are shrunk. They take up less space in the brain. But it's quite difficult to sometimes tell whether that was there before the drinking and sort of prompted someone to start drinking, or whether the damage is done as a result of chronic long-term drinking. But yeah, I think, you know, in cases of people where they're drinking to the point of alcohol dependency, you can create irreversible damage. That's definitely true.
And we're talking just about alcohol. I mean, when you're doing research, you really are studying just the effects of alcohol on the brain. It's not like, you know, because most of the time when we drink, we also do other stuff. Like we suddenly start smoking cigarettes again, or we engage in other types of risky behavior. So it's probably kind of hard to separate everything.
Absolutely. Of course it is. Yeah. And cigarettes and alcohol particularly are ones that we we see that if people are big drinkers, they're heavy drinkers, they might more likely to be a smoker, or they might be more likely to use other drugs. And I think alcohol is so interesting because of the way it disinhibits us. So you could be somebody who has quit smoking or has quit using other substances, but then you drink, and drinking is so intrinsically linked to those other substances that people start using them again. But also alcohol really disinhibits us. So a question I quite often get asked is, why are people more violent or more aggressive when they drink? And the answer is, there's really nothing in alcohol that makes people aggressive. It's this disinhibition. So your behavior that's normally under really tight regulation by your brain, and you tell yourself, you know, I mustn't engage in violent or aggressive behavior, it's not acceptable. That part of the brain doesn't work so well when we're intoxicated. So all the things that you know you're not supposed to do or supposed to say are released under alcohol. That's why it's a very interesting drug.
Right. But it's not like everybody gets aggressive, right? I mean, we all know people who do get aggressive, but there's also a lot of people who just kind of become mellow and chill.
Yeah.
So it probably has different effects on different people, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing in alcohol that, you know, if there was something in alcohol that made you aggressive, everyone would become aggressive. And we know that that's not true, as you've just mentioned. So I think it's all to do with, you know, the sort of personality that you have in the first place, I guess. And this is a personality that you're probably keeping under, especially if there's undesirable characteristics, you know, your brain's telling you can't behave like that normally. And alcohol just takes away that, you know, floodgate, if you like. Which is why we see people engage in all sorts of behavior. Like, people say things like, I would never have done that sober. There's no way I'd have climbed up on that really high building, or there's no way I would have punched that person or reacted in that way if I'd have been sober. That's due to alcohol's effect on inhibition. You know, a question that I get asked quite often is, yeah, how do we reduce harm from alcohol? And I guess it's probably reducing, you know, drinking in moderation, I guess.
Dosage.
Is kind of, yeah, one option. I guess those kind of really pleasant effects that we get from alcohol happen quite early, within the first couple of drinks. So, yeah, and some of those kind of more, you know, aggressive related, or when we get to the point where people can't speak or they can't stand up, I think that's when people have, you know, drank a lot of alcohol. So I guess there's a lot to be said in moderation.
Okay, here comes the practical part of this conversation, the Christmas special, if you will, hangovers. Again, I've always been told that a hangover is basically just some sort of concentrated dehydration. Consequently, if you drink, supposedly, a lot of water while boozing, you won't have a hangover. And I can personally attest that, unfortunately, that's not true. So, Dr. Adams, what is a hangover?
So I think you're right. I think a lot of people commonly think that it's just dehydration. And dehydration is part of it. So you are dehydrated because alcohol's a diuretic. So it makes you go to the toilet more. But also add to that the idea that you might be sick, or you might sweat a little bit more after drinking. So yeah, dehydration is part of it, but it's not the whole thing. So as I mentioned, when you drink alcohol, your body has to get rid of it. It has to break down alcohol into substances it can get rid of. And the first step of that is converting alcohol into acetaldehyde. This is literally poisonous and toxic to humans. And that's why people vomit, because of this acetaldehyde. It's why you feel awful, the nausea, the racing heart, all of that. Your body is desperately trying hard to get rid of this really poisonous chemical in the body. So all of that is going on, and no amount of water that you drink is going to undo any of that. You also see an imbalance of electrolytes in your body. Added to that, because alcohol is absorbed through the stomach and small intestine, some people have a upset stomach the next day. And then to add to all of that, alcohol really affects the quality and duration of our sleep. So whilst most people might fall asleep quite quickly, the kind of passing out element when you get to bed. The quality of sleep that you have when you're drinking, but also the duration, is really poor. So added together, all of these different things are why people feel so awful when they're hungover, but also probably why a pint of water isn't going to cut it.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I usually fall asleep faster, like you said, I had a couple of drinks. And then I was under the impression that I sleep better. But who knows what's going on under the hood while I sleep, right?
Yeah, I think research tends to suggest that the quality of the sleep and the amount of REM sleep, so that's the really good quality sleep that you get for consolidating memories, doesn't happen as much when you've been drinking.
Mm. Another kind of urban myth I was always fed was that if you eat something heavy and greasy, especially after binging, like a big kebab or something, it absorbs the alcohol. And then when you wake up, you'll be in a much better state. Any truth to that?
There's some research on this, that having a full stomach slows down the absorption of alcohol. So that's the one thing that I would say you can do to help yourself. So if you know that you're going out and you're going to be drinking alcohol, I think having something that is going to line your stomach, as we call it in the UK, is a good option. If you know that you're going to be drinking, that will slow down the gastric emptying and mean that perhaps the absorption of alcohol is slowed down a little bit. So yeah, if you're able to eat something before you go out drinking, yeah, that could be a good thing.
So we're talking about eating before, not after.
Yes, or is it both? Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to do anything afterwards.
Okay, I had it the other way around.
Oh, no, we've all done that. Yeah, no, that's that you come out of the pub or the nightclub and you go straight for some greasy food. I think, I don't know whether that's just your mind telling you that that's a good thing to be able to do.
Okay, is there anything one can do, besides abstinence, of course, that is scientifically proven to relieve a hangover?
So there's very little research on this area, to be honest. It's often thought of as a very trivial thing, but actually, when you think about how many days people lose to going to work and how awful you feel the next day and the impact that it has on your body and your brain, it's pretty horrendous, really. And at the moment, so we quite often see lots of different pills or miracle cures that promise to take your hangover away. And I think there are things that kind of treat some of the symptoms, the individual symptoms of a hangover, but nothing can take away the whole phenomenon. So, for example, you're right, drinking water can definitely help with the dehydration. These electrolyte sachets can be really good because they replace all the salts and sugars that you might lose from going to the toilet or being sick. There is some research that an amino acid called cysteine, which is found in eggs and bacon, could help with a hangover the next day. But when you think about all of the aspects that I've mentioned, it seems so unlikely that taking one pill or one supplement is going to treat all of those things. And particularly, research is really bad at looking at the psychological effects. So some people really, really suffer the next day with low mood and anxiety. But also in the research that I've conducted, we've shown that people still have really slow reaction times the next day and their decision making is compromised. So hangover is the point at which you don't have any alcohol left in your system. But actually, we showed that there's quite significant cognitive impairment still the next day. So it's very unlikely you're going to be able to fully treat a hangover. But if you can get some water, some electrolytes, some food, catching up on your sleep, if you're able to, these are all good things that you could do.
And you do this, I'm making a recipe right now. I'm writing everything down. I'm going to make millions. Do you do this before you drink or while you're drinking or after you're drinking?
I guess the next day. I guess if you're looking for things that you could do on the evening of drinking, you could switch between an alcoholic drink and a non-alcoholic drink. Or there are loads of really good alcohol-free alternatives now. So I don't know about the rest of the world, but the UK has got quite good with alcohol-free beers, alcohol-free wines, and they're all quite available in pubs and bars now. So maybe you can switch a drink out. You could do that the night before. And then the next day, water, electrolytes, food if you can, getting some sleep, catching up on your sleep, but also if you're feeling the mental health effects of a hangover, just doing something that you enjoy doing that's going to make you feel better.
Okay, this is awesome advice. But by the way, I just realized, so this sort of guilt trip that you have the next day, that's also part of the hangover. Are you telling me it's not just about feeling bad because you said some stupid stuff, or, you know, you made decisions that otherwise normally you wouldn't have? It's also that there's some chemicals were interfering mm-hmm. with your normal brain processes. Yeah. So there is a physiological aspect, not just not just that you're realizing that your behaviors were kind of insane or shitty or whatever.
Yeah, so the same chemicals that make us feel relaxed when we're drinking fight the against GABA. Us the next day. Yeah, exactly. It has its your brain tries to return it to a normal level, but sometimes it has this rebound effect the next day. So actually you end up feeling worse rather than back to normal. So it's problematic because it's a kind of vicious cycle, because what you intended to do was to relax and to, you know, take away anxiety when you were drinking, but actually it can come back twofold the next day because of alcohol and because of the biochemical effects that it has on your brain. Yeah.
During the interview you gave for The Guardian, you said you stopped drinking completely, and I guess that has to do with your research based on what you've just told me. How has your life changed since then?
I stopped drinking 3 years ago. So I've been doing this research for 20 years into alcohol. And the whole time I've been doing that research, I've always drank. I've always, you know, never thought anything differently. Obviously, I know that it's bad for you and it has these physical and mental health effects. But actually, ironically, as a hangover researcher, I really struggled with hangovers, particularly felt really anxious the next day and really low. And I decided that, knowing what I knew about the brain, that it would probably be a good idea to not drink. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And night and day, the anxiety I got the next day is kind of really completely gone. And I just find that my brain it functions a lot better. I sleep a lot better. I'd kind of almost call it the ultimate life hack, really, not drinking. And I really enjoyed drinking. And I was never sort of, even though it was my research area, I was never one of these people who, I'm still not anti-alcohol now. It's about making a choice, right? About weighing up as an individual what the risks are and the benefits to you as a person. And I'm still not anti-alcohol now, but giving up alcohol really changed my life.
And may I ask, what do you do in social situations where like most people drink and, you know, are like, are you not going to have a glass of wine?
It's more difficult at the beginning when you tell people that you're stopping drinking, because they're not sure why you're doing it or if it's a permanent thing. But actually, it's led to me having really great conversations with people about, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, you used to love a drink, why have you stopped drinking? It's opened up really great conversations. And over the 3 years, more and more of my social circle have stopped drinking and do alternative things now. So actually, my life's changed in the sense that I spent a lot of time in bars and in pubs. And now I do lots of other really cool stuff that I would never have done before when I was drinking. You know, I'm running a marathon next year, which I thought I would never do. You know, I play more board games. I have an allotment. You know, you find that there's loads of other things to do that don't just involve being in a bar. And yeah, it really is life changing.
Oh, a lot of my listeners are literally going to crucify me when I release this episode. But sometimes some truths are uncomfortable. What can you do? Well, I'm going back to looking for shortcuts. I'm just kind of astonished that there's no hangover cure yet. We can clone animals and discuss poetry with AI, and yet there seems to be zero advances in this. I thought, you know, I would have thought this is a very desired medicine.
Hangover's bizarre, right? Because it's not a medical condition. It's something we do to ourselves. It's viewed quite trivial. So when I tell people that this is my research area, obviously there are people who do research into cancer or cloning or these things that are really important for human development and understanding, you know, preventing disease in humans. When I tell people what I do, most people laugh or find something funny to say about it. But actually, I think the impact of hangover is huge, right? This is something we choose to do to ourselves, usually throughout a lifetime, that has a profound effect on us physically and mentally. I mean, it's been a while since I had a hangover, but I can still remember how awful you feel, right? It definitely gets a little bit worse as you get older.
Oh, yeah.
And you did this to yourself, right? Voluntarily. And the impact that this has on you, but also being able to do work, being able to interact with people, being able to do your job, being able to do what's, you know, normally you would have chosen to do is wild. So, I mean, I would love to see more research done in this area. I mean, I think you hinted at this earlier, but if I had a cure for a hangover, I'd be a billionaire.
Okay, last question. Asking for a friend, but what piece of advice would you give to people who are going to have a drink or two over the holidays to come out of it as unscathed, as fresh as possible?
Like we said, I think I recommend having a meal before you start drinking to slow down that absorption. Whilst you're drinking, if you're able to swap some alcoholic drinks for some soft drinks or some alternatives, just to kind of give yourself a bit of a gap so that the alcohol doesn't accumulate. And I guess the next day, getting some water, making sure you're not dehydrated, getting some electrolytes, a sports drink or one of those sachets that's got electrolytes in it, eating some food if you can, getting some good quality sleep and catching up on that. But also if you're feeling really low or not feeling very good or anxious the next day, just doing something that's going to make you feel better. For me, that used to be watching a film that I'd seen a lot of times before, or spending time with people who I could just be relaxed with. So yeah, just not trying to be too hard on yourself, I think.
Okay. Electrolytes, putting on the Big Lebowski, getting some sleep.
Yeah, and that's it. Okay. That's it. That's a good film. Yeah, that's a good one.
Dr. Adams, thank you so much. I have to cut down on this. And hopefully if we do this again, I'll be a new man.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Again, this podcast has no sponsors, no production team, and no editors. It's just little old me. And as such, I'm at the mercy of you lovely folks watching and listening. So please do subscribe on YouTube, click that little bell thing or whatever it helps. Follow on Spotify and Apple Podcasts if you can. Also, I don't want to sell you like an atrocious t-shirt that you don't really need. So if you can, and most of all, if you want, of course, please support me on Patreon. And here I have to express my eternal gratitude to my patrons on Patreon, aka the producers of this show. As always, without you, tovarishi and tovarishice, this show simply would not exist at all. So a massive thank you to Goran Ivasic, Anže Sever, Ole, Marin Ferrara, Aljaš, Štrole, Ajda, Mancian, Miha Medved, Medinjo, Goran, Gordan, Lorenzo, Jurečuk, Mila, Carmen, Veronika, and Taichi. You guys are the best.